May it please the Court. Appellant, the plaintiff below, Bodum USA, brought an action against La Cafetiere, the appellee, alleging that La Cafetiere had a French press-style coffee maker, the Classic, that infringed trade dress rights in Bodum's iconic product, the Chambord. The action alleged claims under the Lanham Act, the Illinois Deceptive Practices Act.
I have two questions to make sure I understand your position. One, are you arguing that the model that La Cafetiere is selling now differs from the Classic model at the time of the earlier transaction, the 1991 transaction?
Essentially the same model, Your Honor. We are arguing the same model.
Yes. The pictures in the record?
Yes, they are, Your Honor.
Okay. So you're not arguing that there's any difference in the models. Okay. That's my first question. Second, when you say there is an infringement of trade dress, what do you mean by trade dress? Are you referring to the coffee maker itself, or are you referring to its packaging and advertisement?
In this case, it's the coffee maker itself, Your Honor.
All right. Well,
have you registered
the trade dress? I won't try to insist that you talk about this now, but I assume you don't have a design patent on this thing.
Correct.
So if you're trying to use trademark law to forbid them from making an identical product, you're essentially arguing to us that we should use trademark law to overrule Sears against Stifel, because the holding of Stifel is that as a matter of federal law, anybody can copy a product exactly. You can't package and sell it in a way that makes it look like somebody else's product. But if Sears wants to copy Stifel's lamp down to the last detail, the Supreme Court says in the Stifel case, it's perfectly free to do it. It reiterated that in Benito Boats. Mm-hmm. And I'm very skeptical about using trademark law to overrule such foundational decisions in the law of intellectual property.
Well, Your Honor, there are cases which have upheld product trade dress in a circumstance
where... That's why I asked you what you meant by trade dress. If they're presenting their coffee maker in a way that would cause a reasonable consumer to be confused about whether it came from Bodum or La Cafetiere, sure, you got a trade dress claim. But if you're just saying they're offering a model that looks identical, but they're doing it in distinctive packaging in a way that won't lead people to think that this is Bodum's machine, then I don't think you're not going to get anywhere. Or alternatively, in the classic way, there's no secondary meaning attached to the machine as opposed to the packaging.
Your Honor, we believe that we could prove that the product itself establishes secondary meaning.
Your argument is that there are decorative features, right? And those decorative features are the trade dress.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Because, you know, we have this concept in trademark law of a functional mark. So you can't trademark the circular shape of a tire. But if you put some little decorative things on the tire, then your tire, that's your trade dress. So your argument must be that, you know, like the shape of the knob and the shape of the feet on the thing and the design on the base, that these somehow are distinctive. Is that your argument?
That's precisely the argument.
So did you register your trade dress? Or
no, it's an unregistered trade dress, Your Honor.
Unregistered. Based on these. Okay, I want to ask you about French law. You know, I'm really bothered by the fact, and we've had this in previous cases. We had a case involving Argentine law a few months ago called Achat. Neither of you refer to any literature on the meaning of French law. You've got these lawyers giving affidavits. Look, there's a huge literature in English, in French also, obviously, on, you know, French contract law. And that's what's authoritative, not what you get some lawyer to say. And your lawyer is saying stuff which is completely contrary to what the scholarly literature says is French contract law. It's just wrong.
Your Honor,
look,
we rely...
What they say... Do you know anything about French procedure in contract cases? Do you think you'd get a jury in France decide a case?
No, Your Honor, I don't expect we
would.
What
would you get? What is the tribunal you would get?
We would get a judge, I imagine.
No, you would not get a judge. You would not get a judge. The French commercial courts consist of businessmen, not lawyers, who do this sort of thing on a part-time basis. It's basically arbitration. And these lawyers, these arbitrators, they're not lawyers. They're not comfortable with witnesses. They don't listen to witnesses. And in fact, French procedure in general is on documents. It's very rare to listen to witnesses. The judge decides whether they're going to be witnesses. The lawyers don't have that right. And usually, I could read you things from this literature. They're not interested in testimony. They even have a doctrine, clause claire et précise, which says that if the language of a contract is clear, that's pretty much the end of the case. The judge can, you know, if he really thinks that this seemingly clear language doesn't really reflect the intentions of the parties, yeah, then he can look beyond it. But that's exceptional. That's exceptional. Apparently, a contract case, the, quote, trial of a contract case in France lasts an hour, right? So I don't see why you're having lawyers saying things which are contrary to what the, you know, what the literature says. I don't know why that is the mechanism, why that's the machinery by which a foreign law is presented in American case. Look, in the case of this French civil code, I'm not expecting, you know, American lawyers to know French. The translations are official French translations, right? So the English version is, you know, as authoritative you're going to get. So fine, that's the basis. You can read the English, and then, you know, you can look at what we are told French law is about.
So, Rule 44.1 does allow expert.
Pardon?
Rule 44.1 does allow expert testimony.
No, you can. But the question is whether it is helpful to a court. I mean, if you look at your table of contents, there's no reference to any literature about French law. And the question is it really is it helpful to us, to the district court, to have affidavits by lawyers when there are, you know, numerous articles which address the precise issue, you know, role of oral testimony in contract interpretation and the degree to which the court should follow the language, you know, clear language and so on.
Right.
I find that very troublesome. And then when you turn to the language of the contract, the Article 4, I don't see what leg you have to stand on.
Wait. Your Honor, if I may, I think, first of all, the lawsuit is brought, of course, in the United States, in the court of the United States, to enforce a United State, what we believe is a United States statute. French law provides is chosen as the rule of decision for the contract.
See, look,
so, Your Honor,
have,
I think...
Look, there's a problem. The problem is that French procedure is very different from American, and it's much looser, and I say it's more documentary. French judges, even these, you know, arbitrator-like, or maybe especially the arbitrators, they have a lot more flexibility. If they want to, you know, go behind the clear language and so on, they can do that. But when you marry, so their contract law is obviously shaped by the procedures by which it's administered in France. And when you bring it over and then you use our procedures to administer the French law, it's a mishmash. But even putting that apart, even though the French judges can, you know, roam more than we would let a jury roam, The fact is they very rarely do it. They put great weight on the language of the contract. And I think the language is very clear.
Your Honor, of course, that's a point on which we have a different view. We think that the language is not clear and is ambiguous.
Now, that
in
I understand.
Any
now, that we can talk about. That's a different issue from whether, no matter how clear it is, you have a right to let a jury, you know, say, well, you know, we think it's, we like Bodum, we want them to win, and so on. No, I don't.
I don't really think that's what we're trying to make,
Your
Honor.
Focusing on this sentence, though, where it says, notwithstanding Article 4, buyer agrees that stockholder can manufacture and distribute any products similar to the company's product outside of France, period. That's the key sentence. And it's very difficult to see why that doesn't mean, you know, products with different trade dress or products that are not the identical product. And... Okay. So you're just kind of stuck with that.
Well, right, Your Honor. But that's our point. We don't have any trouble with La Cafetière selling products that are, say, other types of French press coffee makers that don't have our trade dress.
But what about the picture Judge Posner held up? One of them has little feet. One of them has sort of a different kind of bottom. They're not identical.
Well, the two in this case both have the same type of frame, Your Honor. The Classic and the Chambord have the same type of frame with the little feet. They have the same dome lid. They have the same knob on the top.
But they're not identical.
They have the same handle.
One of the problems, they're not identical. They're obviously not identical. They're different. They're similar. That's the problem. They're similar. Of course, they're very, very similar. But they're not identical. Also, the other thing, I have trouble with the naked license issue. Now, neither of you actually believes there's a naked license here. Is that correct?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that
that you granted a naked license to La Cafetière.
We don't believe we granted any license.
Yes, I know. And you don't believe you granted a naked license. They don't argue that you granted a naked license either. Right.
Right.
But I don't see what else that first sentence that Judge Wood read means. This is an entitlement, you know. You're granting an entitlement. Can manufacture and distribute any products, some of the company's products, outside of France? Isn't that a grant of a license?
It
reads that way.
What
you'd expect this thing to say, if your argument is right, is that they're not allowed to sell... identical products outside of England, I guess, basically. Right? That's what it says. But in fact, the way it's worded, it starts off with a grant. With a grant of a right to La Cafetière to sell the, or household, to sell the similar products.
Yeah.
Why isn't that a license?
Well, we would look at it as an exception to the
non-compete
provision.
Well, what's an exception about it?
Well, because in the first paragraph...
Because of notwithstanding. Yeah, but it agrees that that they can do that. You're allowing them to sell similar products. What if the similar products are confusingly similar?
We would think that if they're that close, that they would not be the type... That would be beyond similar. That would be sort of what the district court kind of had an intermediate position. They said it was very similar, the trade
okay, so
the product
if
here.
It's
so
very similar, what? Then can they sell it or not?
They can sell it if it's not the same product.
What if it's very similar? It's not identical, but it's very similar, which is what you think they are.
Well, that's,
then can it sell it out? Outside of France?
If it's a product that does not infringe our trade dress, Your Honor,
that's circular. If it's very similar, is that an infringement?
Not if it's a different product.
Well, if it's not identical, but it's very similar, does that violate your rights?
Let me give you a concrete example. Suppose it's exactly the same... French press coffee pot on the outside, but the little circular thing that you use to push down, instead of having little circles in it, has little triangles in it. So somebody looking at it from the outside would just see French press, and let's say they haven't turned it around to see the word Bodum embossed at the bottom of one and La Cafetière embossed at the bottom of the other. Are those the same, or are they different, or are they similar, or are they very similar, or what are they?
Well, I would say within the meaning of our trade dress, the way we look at it, those would be essentially identical products. That would go beyond similar.
Even though they're different, because the little triangles instead of little circles in the press part.
Yes, because the decorative features are what define the product for purposes of a trade dress case, and those little triangles wouldn't make any difference whatsoever.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, do you argue that do you argue that La Cafetière can't sell French presses in France?
That cannot sell. No, we don't argue that.
Well, you say it's not entitled to any such activity in France. That's the sale of similar products. Wouldn't any French press be similar to your French presses?
Well, it would be, our position would be they could sell French presses of a different design that didn't have the same design features.
But it says they can't sell similar products in France.
Well, that was for the,
is that correct?
During the 4 years of the non-compete, Your Honor.
In Article 4, they can't sell similar products in France.
Oh, in
right? Second sentence?
Correct.
Okay, well, wouldn't another French press, even if it had different design, different, decorative features, wouldn't it be a similar product?
Right. France was carved out from whatever rights.
So they can't sell French presses in France. Is that correct?
Yes.
They can't sell any French press in France. Okay, I'm just interested. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Mr. Pastrana. Please don't touch the microphone.
May it please the Court. My name is Tom Pasternak of Steptoe & Johnson. I'm here to represent La Cafetière. At the time of
the... I'm going to ask you the same question. Why don't you find out something about French law and you have a case that turns on French law?
Frankly, Your Honor, as we were bringing the motion, we struggled with how to come at the French law issue, how to put the French law in front of the judge in the district court and not... take it away from him, but at the same time show him what the French law was. What we chose to do, as you've seen, is show the declaration, the affidavit from the French expert.
American courts outside of Louisiana apply Louisiana law, some large part of it is French law. They don't say, well, gee, we're Americans. We're monolingual. We can't. You've got to have some witness tell us, what French law is. We can't figure it out for ourselves. I mean, so provincial, right?
It's a
global culture, so you'd think that lawyers would be able to help judges by giving them, materials in English that explain what the law is, rather than having a lawyer's affidavit. What's the value of that?
That was our intent.
Lawyer's affidavit? You hire someone, pay him to tell an American court what the law is? What's that about?
Well, that was our dilemma, and the way
we... I don't think it's a dilemma. I think there are a lot of materials, in English on French law that you can put before a court rather than paying someone to tell the court your version of what this foreign law is.
So what I would say is that you risk, I'm sure every lawyer's nightmare, the court going off on its own to ascertain this by itself, because Rule 44.1 says, in determining foreign law, the court may consider any relevant material or source, including testimony, whether or not submitted by a party or admissible under the Federal Rules of Evidence. So, if it's somebody who's a French speaker and they want to go read the entire Code Civil, they can do that. If it's, somebody who would rather work in English, they can do that. I mean, it can be complex looking at a civil law system as opposed to another, but the experts here were both professors, were they not, at University of Paris, Paris 2 and 12?
Your Honor, they were both professors. I'm not positive on what university they were both from.
It was Paris 2 and 12.
I mean, I think it's a fair point. I don't think there's anything that would change here if the court were to go off and look at treatises or articles. I think the law, as our expert explained the law, we're not asking you to look at his final conclusion. It was just the best way we came up with to help the district court understand what the French law was. We could have chosen to just put the provisions in front of him and let him figure it out on his own. We could have chosen, as you suggested, Judge, you know, to attach some literature. I don't think that changes anything. Had you done it any of those ways?
Published literature about the meaning of French law has the great advantage that it's not being produced by a shill.
That's a fair point. Well, at the time of the 1991 stock purchase agreement, Bodum knew what Household was doing. And they knew what they gave up in the stock purchase agreement. So the resolution of La Cafetiere's motion turns on two simple questions. What product was La Cafetiere authorized to sell? That product is a Chambord-style French press. Mr. Bodum, in his declaration, admitted that he knew exactly what the product was that Household was selling at the time.
I have a question for you for Mr. Bodum's declaration in opposition to the motion for summary judgment. It's in the supplemental appendix on page 47, paragraph 35. He says, prior to entering into the 1991 agreement, Bodum had acquired the exclusive right to distribute the Chambord coffee maker in the United States, as well as the right to the trademark Cafetiere Chambord for use with non-electric coffee makers and so on. So how does that fit into this broader picture?
I think it's a red herring, Your Honor. I don't think it matters.
I mean, he's saying he had the right to distribute these things in the United States, and that presumably means that La Cafetiere was willing to distribute their French presses in all of the other countries of the world, except perhaps France, but not in the United States.
I don't think that's right, Judge. I think it may suggest that La Cafetiere was willing to distribute or sell in the United States in parallel or at the same time as Bodum, which is exactly the situation today.
So just inside, as Judge Easterbrook was saying, just inside a box with different colors or what?
And that's exactly right. If you were to go in Starbucks today, you would see, well, you wouldn't see La Cafetiere because of this litigation, but depending on how it turns out, you may go into a Starbucks in a few months and you'll see a French press, Chambord-style French press, with Bodum packaging on it, and you'll see a Chambord-style French press with La Cafetiere packaging.
Does the record contain pictures of the packaging and advertisements?
It does not, Your Honor, because the trade dress, as I understand it, as alleged, is totally on the product design. And you, I think you well understand.
That's why I'm so puzzled. The Supreme Court has said that trade dress protection depends on secondary meaning. And I don't see how one could assess secondary meaning without looking at the products in their packaging to see whether, if you stare at your client's package, reasonable buyers would go, oh, this is one of Bodum's products. And otherwise, it's impossible to show secondary meaning. So what it sounds like what you're saying is that the record just lacks the basic ingredients for making an assessment of secondary meaning.
That's correct, Judge.
If you don't go into Starbucks, but if you go into Sonoma, the products are displayed. They're not displayed in boxes. They're on the shelf next to each other, right? So if they look identical, someone could be confused, right? Or not, they looked identical. But if you saw something and you thought, oh, that's the Chambord, I remember that, but that would be the problem.
And that would be the problem. We the case never got that far into
right.
actual
so
substance.
So we don't know how these things are actually marketed.
Correct.
So you may be in for another round of litigation.
Back to where I was starting, and at the time of the contract, it was very clear. Bodum admits they knew what we were doing. So this injection, 20 years later, what's similar and what's identical, is just
now,
revisionist.
Judge Hamilton. So he wrote a long opinion, and presumably he had a lot of discovery materials in front of him, right?
Judge Cannelli here.
I'm sorry, Judge Cannelli.
Yes, Your Honor.
So. If the case were reversed, if we thought the summary judgment was premature, would the evidence in the case just be maybe some oral versions of the written discovery materials, or are there other witnesses or other evidence that would be presented, or what?
Your Honor, is the question the evidence on this issue or on the evidence of trade
dress? In general? Well, no, on the trade dress, there'd be a lot more. No,
okay.
I mean on the issue of the contract, meaning the contract.
I think... My guess is the only evidence perhaps would be Mr. Bodum live and Mr. V.L. Castell live. They were key to clearance.
Right, so
it would
be the live versions
yes.
of their depositions or statements. Or.
Would there be more exploration of this question, what does the word similar to mean in that Article 4 provision?
I assume by Bodum there would. I think it.
Well, I mean, it's not inherently. I mean, one could, you know, if the world has to be divided into three different categories, then what's similar might be different than if you're given 30 categories to work with or 300. So I'm not sure similar is a self-defining word.
Well, I think the issue there, Your Honor, is if you go back to the agreement, the issue of similar was never really, there's nothing in the record that it was ever negotiated. And as I was saying, they knew exactly what the product was. The Schomburg
stuff. Thought they knew.
what is, the only point we're really arguing about is where did we have the right to sell it? And that's evident.
Well, do you agree with what Mr. Bennett said, that you do not have a right to sell any French press, no matter what it looks like or what it's called, in France?
No, I don't agree with that. I agree. We clearly can't.
Well, what do you think the force of similar products is, then? Because you're not, I mean, clearly, under this paragraph 4, you're not allowed to to sell similar products in France. So what does that mean?
It means we can't sell a Chambord-style French press in France. There's
no, but then, well...
We can sell one with a flat top. We can sell one. There's a variety of different kinds. There's ones with double walls. There's all different kinds. That clearly means
but
we can't.
But then I don't understand. What do you think is the difference between what you can do in the United States and what you can do in France?
They carved out France. They didn't want us to sell Chambord style in France.
No, but if Chambord style is confusingly similar... You can't sell it in the United States, right?
No, that's the whole point. We can. They renounced any right to come at us on Chambord anywhere in the world except France.
So you interpret similar to mean infringing trade dress.
If you assume there is a valid trade dress, yes.
That seems a little forced.
The time of the negotiation, they knew what the
and
product
was. And what is your argument about the naked license? You're not actually arguing this is a naked license.
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
You don't want it to be a naked license. Because then anybody could sell this.
We never introduced that argument. I think it may be loose use of language somewhere along the line, but maybe Judge Cannelli. We see it as
so is their argument, I suppose I should ask Mr. Bennett, but is their argument that your argument somehow implies that this is a naked license and that they would never do that because then they'd lose their trademark protection in the United States?
I believe that's right, also based on Judge Cannelli's opinion. I think their view is that Judge Cannelli saw it as a license. We never argued it, and we don't need to.
So we should ignore the naked license issue.
I don't think that's the right way to look at it. I would look at it as a renunciation, a covenant not to sue, something like that. The other point is that the big question is where. The language is clear, and if the court doesn't see it as clear, the record of the intent and the flow of, and the loosening of the geographic scope in the documents that are in the record, in the drafts of the agreement, couldn't be clearer. Bodum wanted it limited to England. If you look at the July 24th draft and compare it to the final version, you'll see he ended up giving it away. There's really nothing to look at beyond the two points of what the product is, they knew what it was, and where it could be sold. They gave that right away, and I don't think there's much beyond that that needs to be considered for a decision here. Judge Cannelli was absolutely right. If there's no further questions, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pasternak. Anything further, Mr. Bennett? Good. Please don't talk till you get to the microphone.
Sorry.
Up here.
The only thing I'd say, Your Honor, on the issue of the license, we believe that what Judge Cannelli did was imply a license in a provision which really won't carry that type of implication. He implied a license that La Cafetiere could sell this product into perpetuity in a provision in a contract that was part of a restrictive covenant. And I don't think I think the reason we made the argument about the naked license is just to show that it would have been implausible that Bodum would have agreed to such a thing, kind of what Your Honor just mentioned towards the end of my learned counsel's opponent's argument. So that's how we look at a license. And as far as the grant of the summary judgment, we believe that the jury, because of the fact that the language is not crystal clear, we think it's ambiguous.
But the evidence,
but the jury is entitled.
The oral versions of what was presented to Judge Cannelli.
I think essentially that would be it, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But the question is, what inferences?
But that's the
who
irony.
Who draws the inferences?
That's the irony, because a French commercial court would be perfectly happy to stop with the documents.
They would, but
Judge Cannelli, it's the same opinion he'd write if it were a trial on documents, right?
But Judge Cannelli wouldn't be the decider of fact, Your Honor. We think that we're entitled to
the
jury draw the inferences.
Irony, because you wouldn't get that in France. It's sort of an accident that you're in a different.
That's why I think I'm thankful we live in the United States, Your Honor.
I don't know. Maybe in a case like this, what an American court should do is, certify a question in a French court, the way we do with state courts. They can tell us how to interpret the contract. Wouldn't that make sense? We had a treaty to that effect.
I don't know. I don't know that we have a mechanism, but maybe that would be a way to do it. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.